Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 149, audio podcast, recording on Friday, the 14th of January. It's 2011 still. Yoo-hoo. With me in Sussex, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
Up in Hull, I have...
David Gilson.
And up in sunny Edinburgh, I have...
I see I'm still last. You and Spence here.
I am Steve Litchfield. Of course, we have some discussion points and some news to talk about, all relevant to the Symbian universe and ecosystem, starting off with a small update for all Symbian 3 phones. It's about a megabyte in size, well worth checking SW update for. Nokia simply say this update improves the stability of phone applications, and various people, including our good selves, have attributed various changes to the home screen and folder startup and landscape to portrait rotation speed, all sorts of things which we're not entirely sure about. But we are overall sure that the phones are slightly faster and slightly slicker as a result, as you'd expect. And I certainly would recommend it to everyone to update. All the team, you've all done it on your C1s, C7s and N8s. Any comments from anybody else?
Yes, just a comment to here. So I suspect what they've done here is update one of the sort of back-end libraries, perhaps the graphic subsystem, which is why people are seeing performance improvements right across the board. The one word of caution I'd sound is that sometimes people will see an improvement where there is none. The one I particularly noticed was going into folders. Now, whether that's because there's some kind of caching going on or something else, I don't know, or whether I may be imagining it all together. But yes, certainly the animation seems smoother, and there's some performance improvements, particularly in the Photos application. But of course, measuring these things and making some comparisons is difficult. I did put two devices side by side, and there did seem to be some improvements when switching between different screens. But I wouldn't want to put any money on it. But yes, overall, such updates are always welcome. Just to sort of emphasise, this is a small optional update. You get it through SW update application that's found in the applications folder for the N8, or the applications and then tools folder for the C601 and the C700. There is, of course, expected to be a bigger firmware update in due course. We'll probably see PR 1.1 first, and then the big update will be PR 2.0, which we're expecting sometime in the first quarter of this year, which is the 50 updates that have been talked about, including things like the portrait keyboard. But for the time being, this update is well worth installing, as Steve says.
And it's also worth pointing out that it's not always just the graphics and what's visualized are changing. Nokia could be putting out an update here that increases your battery life by 3.7%, which would be completely invisible while you're handling the screen and playing around with the device, but we'd actually do stuff in the background. It might do better data handling. It might be handling 3G to Wi-Fi to 2G to 3G to back again in a smoother manner. And what I find worrying is that we now have two different types of update that you find in two different places on the phone. There's the big firmware and these little device patches, as they were. I think a little bit more focus is going to be needed, certainly in the next firmware update, to maybe put all these into one place to keep it simple. Is there an update for my device? Yes or no? Not is there an update firmware, change log, device log, software. A little bit of a warning flag of feature creep coming in here, I think.
I can see why they do it that way, Ewan. I think it's equivalent to...
Well, technically, I can, yes. But, there's so much put on user interface and user interaction now. We need to be careful.
Yeah, the actual reason for this, Ewan, is there's several different ways that you can update the firmware of the device, and they have sort of different constraints on how quickly you can get them out. So, for example, the longest one by far will be a firmware update. The quickest one will be updating an individual application. We've seen that already with Nokia Social, and we'll no doubt see that with other applications. The updates that come through SW Update are, in effect, just small updates to individual applications or libraries, and they can be delivered far more quickly than a firmware update, which has a much more stringent or long process in terms of quality control, development, and things like that. And so the reason Nokia are doing this is to make sure that the updates get onto the phone as quickly as possible. I think that's something to be welcomed. I've noticed what they're also now doing with the firmware updates is making them a note available in SW Update saying there is a firmware update available, and then going into the sort of firmware over-the-air section to do it. So I think, in effect, SW Update is becoming the one-stop shop for all updates. And you're seeing a similar pattern in Ovi Suite, where when you plug the phone in, it will check for new updates for you, and that will include applications and updates such as this, but also firmware, of course. And so the intention is to have everything in SW Update But yeah, I mean, perhaps you're right there. There's a little bit of an intervening period where it's not so clear. But to the most users, it doesn't really matter whether it's a small software update like this one or an update that actually changes the firmware number. The important thing is delivering the updates in a timely fashion. And to that, I think it's a big improvement. We've already seen two of these minor updates, both of which have had a significant impact on the performance of the phone.
I'm not disputing in any way the technical stuff. I think it's brilliant that they're getting them out. And I love the fact that they now have now found a way to get these fast updates. I'm thinking more about the user experience, the people who don't understand, well, what's the difference between a firmware update and a device update and an application update? You know, if you, I'll take the iPhone, for example, when there is an update of something, you plug it in, it just goes, there is an update. Google, with the updated applications, slightly issue, it's all in one place. What I'm worried about is that Nokia start, there's a little bit of bloat, there's a little bit goes into devices, a little bit goes into firmware, and it starts to become a little bit diffuse. All the technical arguments are all perfect, but you can't have a modern smartphone that relies entirely on technical arguments. There needs to be a little bit of flair and passion, and also a little bit of OCD in the designer's eye as well. And all I'm doing is flagging up that that needs to be squelched on pretty quickly in Symbian 3.
One thing I'd like to say as well, just directly to anyone who's listening from Nokia, is can we please start getting some exact change logs? Because all of us journalists and bloggers who are kind of putting the message out there for Nokia, effectively, it makes our job so much harder. We're just trying to play this guessing game of basically spot the difference, and it's there's absolutely no need for it, because I mean, surely they know what they're doing because they've done it. So there is a change log somewhere. So please, Nokia, just start publicising it. But also, just to come back to what Rafe and Ewan have been saying, just to take that user experience idea to an extreme, when it's something like an improved driver or some sort of software library, do we actually need to have a notification at all? Or what about having it updating silently? I mean, as a geek, I wouldn't like that. I want to know when code's coming into my phone. But for normobs,
I think there would be a move to do that eventually, but the thing we have to consider with mobile is these updates are often coming over the air and there can be a cost involved in the data, and so there's always going to have to be some kind of alerting mechanism. Would it be possible to put in some kind of setting that had this install them automatically as you have with Windows Update or anything else? Yes, quite possibly. I think, to be honest, my main concern at the moment is making sure that the updates get delivered in a timely fashion. You know, we've come from a period in mobile phones where, you know, there were very rarely firmware updates for mobile phones after they come onto the market, and now there's a user expectation that you'll get significant updates. We're going to see a lot more updates being delivered for Symbian devices in particular over the next 12 months, and so I'm more concerned that they come in a timely fashion and are stable when they arrive. But yes, there's always going to be room for improvement. I mean, for example, I think a lot of people would argue that Apple were one of the first to do the really big updates in terms of features with the iPhone. Nokia had been doing firmware updates before then, and I think have always been the leader in firmware over the air. But looking at the Apple experience now, it's actually not as good as a lot of what you get elsewhere. You know, you have to update a several hundred megabyte update, even if it's a relatively small update, whereas Nokia, some of the Android devices and, you know, other platforms are allowing these small firmware over the air updates, which can be ranging from a few hundred kilobytes in size up to a few megabytes in size. Of course, if you update your firmware, your Nokia firmware, with a PC, you will be doing this full download, but much of the time you can do it, you know, directly from the device. You can do it over the air, Wi-Fi or 3G, you get the choice. And so, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages everywhere, but I mean, I agree with the general suggestion that you want to make it as friendly user experience as possible, but I think right now the focus still needs to be on delivering them in the timely fashion, and that's why I prefer the kind of provision of both big firmware updates for major updates and these smaller over-the-air, you know, either application updates or small updates. But that's just a personal view. Obviously, everyone is going to take a different way of looking at this.
And, of course, it gives us lots of little news stories in the future where we can comment and extrapolate and imagine and explore and guess. Let's move on. Updated version of Swipe for easier downloading of additional languages and performance improvements and, of course, bug fixes. Rafe, you had the story on this.
Yes, indeed I did. This is Swipe, the alternative input mechanism. Basically, you slide your finger over a keyboard without taking it off to sort of draw a word, if you like, and it pops up. I'm sure a lot of people have used this, but the good news here is that there are now additional languages available. It's up to about 15 languages. I won't go through the full list here, but it's everything from Indonesian to Icelandic and most of the major European languages as well.
Does it have Klingon?
It doesn't have Klingon. Funnily enough, you don't find... Yes, funnily enough, you won't find Kronos in Europe. But it does mean that a lot more people are going to be able to use this in this native language. And I did make the point in the news post, this is actually often more significant than a feature update, because you'll be able to reach far more users by doing a localization, that's a translation, than you will be by adding a new feature that might draw in new users. So I imagine that sort of the available people for this will now go up to, you know, towards the 100 million mark instead of being around the sort of tens of millions. Anyway, so good news there. There's also an update for the 65th edition version of Swipe. It's performance improvements, stability improvements, some layout changes on the keyboard as well, and the copy and paste functionality. It's now deemed a release candidate by Beta Labs, and I should say all of these are available through Nokia Beta Labs. So release candidate, expected to be on the Ovi Store shortly. For the Symbian 3 version, that's available in the Ovi Store. An update is expected in the near future to bring it in line with the 65th edition version. So good news all round, and Swipe continuing to impress as an alternative text entry system.
Yeah. HTML email has come to a 63rd edition, proving that Nokia haven't forgotten the old non-touch devices, updating it from version 2.02 to version 3.05. It's a big bump, and there's quite a big change log. David, what's new for E72 and E52 users?
Yep. Well, as well as VERS phones, we've also got C5, E5, and E73, which are eligible for this update too. And really, HTML email view is the big story here. When you open up an HTML email in your email program, you get the same view that you get on pretty much any other like Nokia touch phone. You get the HTML rendered with a little bar at the top saying there's images, do you want to show the images? And then images will be put in line, and it all looks very nice. Although really, on a QVGA screen, HTML view does seem... Well, a HTML view of email does make you realise how limited a QVGA screen is. There is a significant change log, although having tested it myself, I didn't actually see any of the other changes in action. I mean, some of the things we wouldn't have seen would have been, I quote, fixes for tens of critical bugs and solved some key synchronisation issues.
That's rather worrying, isn't it, David? Fixes for tens of critical errors. That's rather a lot of critical errors, to be admitted.
There's no keeping David happy. He's provided with a change log and he complains it's not there. I'm sure they are there. It's fairly typical of an update that you don't notice most of the updates. It's really for those who have been having problems. Hopefully this will fix the problem that you've been having. Though I know from some of the comments on the site, a few of the bugs still seem to have slipped through into the new version.
And many of those critical errors can be simple things that are only caught in strange circumstances, like this will only happen if you set a regular alarm and it's set for 7 o'clock in the morning and the year is 2011. I mean, who'd imagine that getting through?
Well, one visible thing which we do see on the changelog, which definitely isn't there, is that they actually say you're supposed to be able to embed images in the email editor so you can send an inline image to someone else. And that feature, I mean, I tried and it just isn't there, unfortunately. But again, this is a beta version, so everyone keep an eye on it, because hopefully it'll come in at some point.
And it's worth noting that you can't actually get this in an SW update on your devices. You actually have to go manually to the Beta Labs download page, and it's a 4 MB SIS file. I'm sure, assuming that everything works out and they fix the final few niggles and put in the functionality David's missing, they will appear in device firmwares or an SW update actually on the devices. But in the meantime, you need to go to Beta Labs. So see the link on our allaboutsymbian.com in our story.
And it is worth pointing out here with Beta Labs that it is beta software, so only put it on your phone if you're willing to come across a few problems and are willing to, you know, submit a few bug reports if it does go wrong, because otherwise there's precious little point. We've said before that for the most part we've always been satisfied with the software on Beta Labs being relatively stable, but it may vary for you, and certainly for something as critical as email, people may want to think twice about it.
And in any case, beta software, back up your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite right. So I'll, I guess I should go off and write a beta bug report now.
Indeed. Moving on, one final item of software that's rather exciting, really. We gloss over many of the games we review on ovigaming.com and all about Symbian.com, but here's one that particularly took my eye, and I've installed it and been rather impressed. Ewan's currently mid-review on Tom Clancy's Hawks HD. It's a full combat flight simulator in your phone. Ewan, any initial impressions to trail or tease your review?
Oh, no, it isn't, would be the answer to that.
You cannot,
one.
That's your one time of using that joke in 2011. You're not allowed to use it again.
I know. See how I deliberately missed off the impressions one, and I'm saving that for a better time? I'm not wasting that on a Tom Clancy game. I just went for something else. This is not a full combat flight simulator. This is a horrible halfway house between simulator and arcade. The controls are relatively sim-like. You can either use a virtual joystick or the tilt to replicate your control stick. You have pretend touchscreen rubber, rudder buttons at the bottom, which you actually need to turn, and your throttle on the slider screen. I like this because it means that when you're doing a turn, you actually have to use, like a real aircraft, you have to put a bit of pitch in, a bit of roll, and a bit of rudder, kick the stick, swing it round. That's all fine. That's great. But these planes are meant to be the top combat planes of the skies. They are sluggish even when you turn the sensitivity up on the screen. You know, I don't care if I'm putting people to sleep here. This is just, it looks nice. It handles not bad, but it's been done so much better. I have three major flaws with this game. The first one is, if you're trying to be a simulator, be a simulator. Don't have a small single-seat short-range fighter that can carry 200 missiles, 40 bombs, and can do Mach 2. It's
can they not do
going
that?
To happen. No, they can't do that, no. So you're obviously into arcade stuff. If you're into arcade stuff, be an arcade game. Make it so you can turn. If I was doing this as a game and I was going for the arcade one, I'd lose the rudder control and have a combined aileron and pitch back so you can actually turn without having to turn and tilt and press on the screen at the same time while trying to line something up and press the button. Sorry, it just doesn't fall through. But the biggest problem I have with the game is that it suffers from Bruce Lee syndrome. You can be taking however long you like to destroy one fighter, and then once you destroy that one fighter, seven bombers come in on the next wave. And it doesn't matter how long you wait to destroy that fighter, those other seven bombers will wait. If it was a simulator, it would be a time on target attack, everybody would be steaming in, and you would have to actually think about strategy, position in the sky, and where you are. This is not a dogfighter, this is not a simulation, this is not an arcade. Quite frankly, go out and buy Galaxy of Fire.
Yeah, I remember my very first time of playing F-15 Strike Eagle 2 on the PC.
That was a simulator. Every key did three things.
Yes, indeed. And when you were heading into the heart of Libya and there were surface-to-air missiles right, left and centre, sometimes you were fighting off four or five incoming missiles at once and dropping flares and turning and aiming to hit the bridge, and then 2 seconds later some more flares, sharp right up into the sky, and then zoom off the runway, and it was just completely and utterly insanely hectic. And this Hawk seems rather lethargic by comparison. I do agree.
Yeah, quite frankly, you can hear the girl from Ipanema playing in the background as you wait for the next wave of tanks to come through.
Anyway, look out for a full review of Hawks HD on the site in the next day or so, if it's not already up. Now, one interesting post that was put up on another site, the Nokia Guide, one of our friends at Devon, discussing seven reasons why you should choose the Nokia N8 instead of the E7, just looking at the raw specifications and the things that are, quote, missing on the E7. It's a pretty interesting list. I mean, obvious ones, things like micro SD card support is missing on the E7. It's just the internal memory. The camera is obviously aid-off camera rather than auto-focusing, with the appropriate limitations on macro focusing of business cards and documents. There's quoted as having just USB charging rather than USB and 2mm charging. Now, Rafe, you suspect the E7 does actually have the traditional 2mm card as well?
Yes, I'm just trying to check that out myself by looking at the datasheet, so I'll come back to you on that in a moment.
Yeah, the other pluses, of course, the E7 are, of course, the fact it's got this 4-inch CBD clear black display screen. So it'll be by far the largest Symbian touchscreen device in terms of display size. And it's also got the CBD, which really does make a big difference, as Ewan will vouch for on the C601 in terms of outdoor contrast. Also, the E7 has 350 megabytes of internal system storage rather than 135 megabytes free N8. So loads of minor spec differences. Let's go to David first while Rafe's doing his research. David, if you were given the choice, you can have it right today. You can have a Nokia N8 or an E7. You're only allowed to pick one, and it's got to live with you for the next year. Which would you go for?
Do I have to pick just one?
Yes.
It is becoming a really hard choice for me. The first item on this list is saying that, well, text input on the N8 is no problem because you can use swipe. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not sold on swipe. But having said that, I think we're all slowly getting trained into typing on touchscreens more and more. So we could maybe survive with the N8. Whereas I think the camera on the E7 is going to be inferior to the N8. So I really want an E7, but at the moment, is the N8 just might slightly be more useful to me. And I'm amazed to hear myself say that.
Rafe, you got the answer about the charging?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Sorry, I was misremembering from when I saw the E7. What it does have is the high efficiency AC10 charger, so that means that you're able to deliver more current through the USB charging than you're normally able to with some of the other devices, and so it should mean that sort of battery recharge times, for example, yeah, are similar to what you get through a 2mm charger. But yes, it doesn't have a 2mm charger. I guess that was due to some of the constraints in the design. They just weren't able to fit it in with acceptable tolerances, and that's what really the E7 is about in my mind. You know, in order to get that slide-up action in the full QWERTY keyboard, they've had to take tolerances a lot closer, because it's still a relatively thin device, and especially when you're increasing the side of the screen. You know, they've put that keyboard in, so if you want the keyboard, you probably know about it, and you then have to accept the sort of design compromises that go along with that. One of that is obviously the 2mm charger. Another good example is the micro SD card slot. You know, there wasn't really anywhere they'd be able to fit it in within the design, and I say keep these same tolerances, and what I mean by that is it's not just enough to be able to fit it in, you need to be able to fit it in such that it won't break when the device is dropped, or it won't interfere with reception on the aerials or things like that. And if you actually look at the E7 when you've got it in your hand, the place that traditionally the micro SD card slots go is on the spine of the device, and because of the hinge, there's no longer room to have that there. So it's, you know, it's really up to the individual whether that's an acceptable trade-off. I think the camera is probably the one that will catch most people's attention in terms of, you know, giving up the 8-megapixel camera. Everything else I think you can probably live with, and personally for me, I would be, I think I'm going to have to try the device out and see how good the keyboard is, but it's the extra size of the screen is very attractive to me, but that does mean the overall size of the device then gets a lot bigger.
Yeah, one peculiarity, Rafe, the E7 is coming in at £100 or more than the N8, and it's a premium device. It really is a flagship, and yet in the box it doesn't come with the two vital adapter cables that the N8 does come with, the HDMI adapter cable and the USB on the go. And certainly USB on the go is a huge feature for the E7, given the fact it hasn't got a micro SD card slot. This is the one way where you get access to extra storage and, you know, files in and out via direct transfer. So why on earth are Nokia not putting any USB on the go cable in the box? Any ideas?
I don't have any accurate information on this. I can only really speculate, and generally with the inbox accessories, it's about customising it to a specific market or just knocking a few dollars off the cost. I suspect here what we'll see is some variation between the markets, so in some cases it will come with the cables, in some cases it won't. The other big difference, of course, with compared to the N8 is these cables are now available separately. That's partly for availability on things like the C7 and the C6. And Nokia have worked to sort of make sure these are available in retail channels, so perhaps it's given people the choice. But yes, I agree with you, particularly the USB cable seems strange. The HDMI cable is perhaps less strange. You know, the E7 is a business-focused device, although given the ability to project onto either projectors or TV screens with the cable, yeah, for maybe doing slideshow, that seems like a curious omission as well. But I guess it's one more factor people may want to take into account when deciding which device to get. But I think probably the overall thing to remember about the E7 is basically this is Nokia's corner office device, as I've heard it referred to. In other words, this is the E-Series device that you give to the boss to keep him happy with having the hottest, you know, the best, the most premium device that they can get, and everyone else in the office.
What's your top writer, Steve, of course, in the corner?
Absolutely. And everyone else will end up with sort of either an E72 or indeed, you know, an E5 or something like that. And I suspect they'll probably device running Symbian 3 somewhere in between, you know, the E7 and some of those other devices I've just mentioned in time. You know, we know that the E6 doesn't yet have a model assigned to it, and I don't suppose we're going to have too long to wait for that.
Yeah, it should be noted that the list of E7 accessories is actually on the web. That is not necessarily definitive, and that's just subject to change. Until we actually see real retail E7s come out in our hot, sweaty hands, we won't really know what they put in the box. So I'm not going to slam Nokia too much until we actually get that. And I gather an E7 is due for come out for review in the next couple of weeks, Rafe?
Yes, we're expecting to get the E7s as they come onto the market. And at the moment, that's still sort of scheduled for the end of January, beginning of February, but we'll keep everyone updated, and yes, we'll be doing our usual in-depth review. I suspect Steve is quite keen to get his hands on this, so the review will be even more in-depth than usual, but we will, of course, be looking at it more from the enterprise viewpoint, where, of course, the N8 was very much a consumer device, and so I do think that changes the goalposts a little bit, and probably Nokia will come out looking quite good, because things like battery life and some of the enterprise functions do become more important.
Yeah. Okay, Ewan, same question to you. If you are presented with the choice of having an N8 now or an E7 and it's got to last you for a year and you can only have one of the two, which would you pick?
Well, I would choose the N8 for the simple reason that 8 is better than 7.
Oh.
but and this is an important thing. First of all, the E7 is not the biggest touchscreen Symbian device, Steve.
Okay,
Sign netbook, 7.7 inches touchscreen.
Yeah, that was in the year 2000.
Yeah, I know, but there we go. If I'm not getting away from my impressions line, I get to put in an obscure Scion reference. It's because I think I want one of these as my mobile phone. I don't want these as my computer. And I know that this is the E7 is an enterprise device that is designed to replicate a lot of portable computer functionality. That's not what I need in the phone. I would... You know, even taking the N8, I would still trade in my mind up, but in other people's minds down, back to that C601. I want my phone to be small enough to be always with me. I want it to do everything that I need it to do. And the fact that they've got a very similar software loadout over the C601, the C701, the N8, the E7, whatever is it going to appear between the E5 and the E7, tough one. They do roughly the same, but I want something that's robust, that's small, that's portable, that I know it's just going to work, and the E7 to me looks a bit too fragile, too big. I'm not always going to want to carry it. The N8, yes, you can take a kitchen knife to it, Steve, which you've delightfully shown, but to me, it's still a bit big and bulky. It's not a phone that I would always automatically pick up. I want my phone to be a this is just me, but I want my phone to be my phone, my computer to be my computer.
So, Steve, can I ask you a question? Would you go for the N8 or the E7?
I think I'd have to go for the N8. I just cannot ignore that camera. I cannot ignore the overall form factor. The E7 does look wonderful having the large screen, but I've been playing with things like the HTC HD7 and other non-Symbian devices, and those devices, they just get huge. The Dell Streak I'm reviewing for the next phone show, and it's enormous. And going back to something like the Nokia N8, it's just the right size in the hand. It's just big enough to be useful and not so big that it gets in the way all the time. The E7, I'm just slightly worrying about the size. I'm slightly worrying about the bulk and the weight. I'd love the keyboard. I've been a huge, you know, Scion fan and communicator fan over the years. I'm longing to review it for that very reason. But I'm just a tiny bit apprehensive, and I'm apprehensive about things like the micro SD and the camera and the other restrictions we've talked about. Ewan, you have one last point?
I did have, and it's went completely out of my head, and it's actually way one for me. Give me three and I'll try and remember it. It was about what you were saying about...
Well, Ewan's racking his brain, I'm just going to come back and give the E7 a little bit of a boost, because E-series devices have always been my favourite for a long time, and the sort of fact that we haven't had a Symbian 3 one has sort of been much to my disappointment. So I think I probably would choose the E7 on the basis that I really like the idea of having the keyboard on the device, and that's a bigger screen size, so clear black display technology as well. And I think for the kind of use that I get out of a phone, that would probably enable me to be more productive than something like an N8, although I'd probably admit that from a, you know, entertainment point of view, you know, particularly obviously with the camera, the N8 would probably be superior. But I guess I have to put productivity and work first, and therefore I'd say I'd choose the E7. But I suspect it will actually take me using the device for a while to sort of make a definitive decision on that, because as we've said here, some of the compromises, you know, do make it a difficult decision. On the other hand, you know, the E7 is going to be rather more exclusive, I feel, than the N8. So from the point of view, if you want to have the top-end Nokia Symbian device and the one that's probably going to be seen less out and about in the world, you know, the E7 is maybe the one to get. So there's the snob factor as well. So you could have an E7 if you want to sort of show off and say that, you know, I've got the very best from the Nokia Symbian range.
I've remembered what it is, guys.
Excellent.
It's the fact that we're not arguing over software. It's the fact that we're arguing over form factors and hardware. Remember 2-3 years ago when we were deciding what end device, you had to decide, do I want this bit of software in the package and the other bit of software? Is the video editing more important than having a slightly better camera? And we had to, you know, there were so many permutations in the software and the hardware that it was impossible to choose the best phone. Here, the software is steady over the range. We're deciding what we want in terms of form factor, and that's not only good for the market, that's good for developers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, just one last point from me, it's just playing the My Fantasy Phone Is game for a moment. Looking at the N8 and E7, I actually think they've got the screens the wrong way around. Because I remember when I was actually at Nokia World and I was talking to a rep and she was asking me what I thought to the E7, and I actually said, I want that with the N8's camera. But thinking about it more, is that I think touch screen input, it gets better the bigger the screen is. So in a sense, the E7 doesn't need that bigger screen, whereas the N8 doesn't have any keyboard, so it could do with a bigger screen, and you're more likely to be taking photos outdoors when the clear black display would be good. So yeah, if we could have a 4-inch version of the N8, that would be nice, please.
Yes, Nokia, stop the production lines. Factories, stop. Back. Lorries, back into your bays. We're going to switch the screens, okay?
Or David, you could just hold it closer to you.
That works. But such, I think David makes a great point there. And people may recall the difference between the 9500 and the 9300. And the 9300 went on to be a very good seller. And it was basically down to the size. And I think one of the comments that I draw out in general from everybody here has been there's a concern about the size of the E7. And personally, I'd have been quite happy with a 3.5-inch screen as we have on the N8 and just cutting down the size of the E7. But I suspect, again, that's a sort of design tolerances in order to get in that full-size QWERTY keyboard, which we haven't tried out in, you know, for long-term angle yet, so we have yet to really make an assessment of that. But yeah, it's, if anything, this goes to show there's no keeping anybody happy and everybody wants a different phone.
Especially on the All About Symbian team, where we're super fussy. Just one point for you, and there's also the 4.5-inch screen on a Symbian phone on the Nokia 9210, which again is there, larger than the E7. So there are precedents here. But we must wind up. We're running out of time, guys. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. Goodbye to Rafe.
Goodbye, everybody.
And a goodbye to David.
Bye, everybody.
And a goodbye from Ewan.
And goodbye, everybody, as well.
Yes, you can find us on allaboutsymbian.com. Don't forget the AAS channel on Twitter as well. But we'll catch you next week on the All About Symbian Insight podcast.